Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
FM News Talk 97.1. On demand audio.
Glad to have former Missouri Senator Jim Talent back on the show this week with the Bipartisan Policy Center. Jim, how are you?
I am fine, Mark. How are you?
I'm doing all right. What do you? I know that you served with Joe Biden in the Senate. What do you think about his run finally dipping his toe in the waters here?
I'm not really high on his chances. I think his support is broad but not very deep, and I don't know that he has a grip on a substantial block of voters who will stick with him, which is what you need in this kind of a primary. I think he has a soft hold on a lot of different kinds of voters, and that just invites everybody else who thinks they can get into his lane to go after him.
Yes.
So that's the nature of these primaries. I mean, you have got to, you know, you've got, first of all, it helps a lot if you do better than expected. And given where he's starting from, that's going to be difficult for him. And second, you have to survive. I mean, and momentum is a lot. So, and also, you know, it's going to be hard for him to be authentically, I think, as angry as the others, because I don't think that's his style.
Right.
So, but we'll see. Listen, this process is crazy, as we saw a couple years ago with President Trump's arrival on the scene. So we just have to watch and wait and wonder.
You know, I found a story on The Hill. TheHill.com carried this story about Joe Biden's 2020 Ukrainian nightmare. Are you familiar with that story?
Oh, this is the nightmare for a guest. No,
yeah,
I'm not.
No. I just wondered because it only came out here recently. Apparently, back in 2018, Joe Biden was at some foreign policy event, and he made a statement about how firm he had been with the Ukrainians in demanding that they fire this state prosecutor who's, let's see, what was his last name? I'm trying to think here. His last name was Shokin. There was a state prosecutor in the Ukraine. The U.S. promised them $1 billion in funds or loan guarantees or something like that. Listen to Joe Biden tell this story.
I guess the 12th, 13th time to Kyiv, and I was supposed to announce that there was another $1 billion loan guarantee. And I had gotten a commitment from Poroshenko and from Yatsenyuk that they would take action against the state prosecutor, and they didn't. So they said they were walking out to press conference. Said, "No," I said, "I'm not going to, or we're not going to give you the $1 billion." They said, "You have no authority. You're not the president." The president said, "I said, call him." I said, "I'm telling you, you're not getting the $1 billion." I said, "You're not getting the $1 billion. I'm going to be leaving here." And I think it was what, 6 hours. I said, "I'm leaving in 6 hours. If the prosecutor's not fired, you're not getting the money." Oh, son of a bitch. Got fired. And they put in place someone who was solid.
So here's the rest of the story, according to The Hill. They claim that this Shokin, this prosecutor, was investigating wide-ranging corruption dealing with a natural gas firm called, it was called Burisma Holdings, which just so happened to employ Biden's younger son, Hunter, as a board member.
Mm-hmm.
And that, according to Shokin, he was getting ready to issue subpoenas on the executive board of that company, including Hunter Biden. And now we find out that Joe Biden insisted that the prosecutor, maybe for other reasons, be fired before the U.S. or the U.S. would withhold $1 billion in loan guarantees.
Right.
I've never heard him explain this, and I think it's going to come back to bite him a little bit.
See, this is an example of the twofold problem he's got. First of all, he's been around a long time, and he's never really been under scrutiny. We've seen this. I wrote a column about, you know, his tendency to touch people, and I said, you know, he's only gotten a pass from the mainstream media, but this is a different environment, right? So we don't know what's there because there really hasn't been that kind of scrutiny before. And the second thing is, see, he tells that story, and it may have been, and you know, and I think Joe Biden's an honest guy. I mean, I served with him, so I would doubt that there was a conflict of interest thing. But doesn't the way he tells that story, it just sounds so inside baseball.
Yeah.
This is establishment maneuvering stuff, right? Now, it wasn't. I mean, if he's on the up and up with this, it was diplomacy and maybe good diplomacy. But look how it sounds, right? And I just don't think that's a tone that is really very effective in either party among the partisan bases right now.
Yeah, I don't think that's opposition research. I mean, The Hill reported it. What was the date on this? I'm trying to see. So April 7th. So they reported that about a week or two
ago. And all this
stuff
is going to come out.
Yes.
See, to the vice president, you know, this is a way of showing how effective he has been and could be in office. But, I mean, to the average person, it's, okay, you're flying over to the Ukraine and using our foreign aid, which we pay for with our tax dollars, as a bargaining chip to get something that we don't understand. You see?
Yeah.
That it comes across as kind of like out of touch unless you really have the context. Now, this was, I assume, a private talk he gave. He's not going to do this kind of thing on the campaign trail, but there's a lot of this stuff out there.
So, Jim, I have to ask, I saw an article again the other day about the Secretary of Defense position and the fact that the acting Secretary of Defense is still not been confirmed, that there may be some, I don't know if somebody's slowing down the process, but I saw that your name is still floating around out there. Is that something you would have interest in?
It is floating around, but look, you know, we need to, the president needs to send somebody over to the Senate, and I think he likes to have actings because it gives him a lot of maneuverability. And I've learned watching Trump the last couple of years that he has a different take on things, which is really effective for him. But this is the kind of job where you need, you know, a permanently Senate confirmed person, because they have to have the respect of the people they command. They have to be able to represent the department's equities in the rest of the administration. And they have to, you know, they represent the government in dealing with foreign military leaders a lot. So they need to send somebody down. And I'd be interested if they're interested, but we need somebody who wants to support this rebuild, and we need to get this decision made. And I think it's going to be made pretty quickly. If I had to guess, they're going to send Shanahan's name down. And, you know, he was a good deputy. If they do send him, I have no reason to believe he wouldn't be a good secretary.
Well, good. Well, I just wanted to ask the question because I saw a story on that again the other day. I appreciate your
candid. And I didn't mean to be distracted. I just said the first thing I thought, which is, and I've been thinking this for several weeks now, I get the whole acting thing.
Yeah.
I get the president, and he wants to make the right decision, and it works for him. But this is a department where the secretary really does have to do a lot within the department. And so he needs to get this decision made, and I think we'll see it pretty soon.
So, off of that, let me ask you a question about a region of the world that doesn't get discussed enough. You and I have talked about it in the past, but it doesn't come up very often. And that is our relationship with China and the South China Sea. I have an aunt and uncle, believe it or not, who live in the Philippines. And they sent me a picture the other day, and off the coast of where they're staying right now was the USS Wasp, an aircraft carrier. And apparently it's over there. The news is all over the Philippines because the Philippine president is about to get in a shoving match with China. And my uncle points out that the U.S. has a treaty agreement to defend the Philippines in a situation like that. Do you know anything about that? And are we on the verge of getting into some altercation with China over there?
Well, I wouldn't describe it as being on the verge. Okay. But China is asserted sovereignty, basically over the East and South China Sea, okay? Now, that's ridiculous, but that's what they're claiming. I mean, it's ridiculous in terms of international law. They're not backing down, and they are regionally the predominant military power. They've been pushing around their neighbors, including the Philippines. They took a shoal, like a little island called the Scarborough Shoal, from the Philippines about 5 years ago, basically. They just isolated it and forced the Filipinos off of it. And yes, the Philippines, we have a mutual defense treaty with the Philippines. Now, it's not clear whether it extends to some of these shoals, okay? But it is clear what the Chinese are doing and why. They're pressuring, and they're pressuring our allies. And one of the reasons is they're trying to show that they are the boss of that area, and the United States can't do anything about it. And this is why the president has quite correctly named our competition with China as the national challenge that we're confronting. And they're doing a lot about it, but we're starting from a depth because we dug such a deep hole. And don't get me going on it, you know, but we just did. And we are weaker than they are in that region, and they are using their strength.
Militarily and economically, both we're in a struggle with them because if you're not, I mean, I know that we used to have several big bases in the Philippines. Didn't we have to pull out of some of those a few years back?
Yeah, in the first Bush administration, we lost the Subic Bay naval base. And, of course, at the time, I mean, there was a squabble with the Filipinos about how much we were paying, and I get all that.
Yes.
But at the time, of course, we all thought history had ended. I didn't. That's one mistake I didn't make. And that, therefore, none of this was necessary. Well, we sure could use that naval base now. Now, what we have been doing, the administration has been very good at this, is strengthening our ties with the Filipinos. And I think, you know, increasing military cooperation, trying to build back up. But this is hard to turn the ship of state around. They're doing a good job, but we got a long way to go to catch up. And I'm very concerned about it. I mean, it's my number one. I got a lot of big national security concerns, but this is the one that will be the hardest because the Chinese are tough, they're strong, they're economically strong, they're innovative, and they're challenging us across every domain. I mean, I'm about to go to a hearing on their space program, and we ought to do an interview on what their plans are for space because people would not believe it. They have a concrete plan to actually dominate the cislunar environment, industrially as well as economically. I mean, they want to extract minerals from the moon.
Wow!
Sounds your listeners are saying, "Oh, that's crazy." It's not crazy.
It's not, no,
they landed on the far side of the moon. I mean, they have now a lot of this capability they've stolen from us, but they've got it, and they're building on it. And if they get that kind of dominance, I mean, look, if this were the Japanese or something, I'd say go to it. You know, we'll all benefit. But they'll do the same thing in this cislunar environment that they're doing in the South China Sea. We can't kid ourselves. And yes, we depend on space.
You know, I did read an article the other day that the Chinese were either hacking into or using U.S. satellites.
Oh, don't get me going because we'll take the rest of the hour on this. I am so angry at this. A Chinese state-owned enterprise has partnered with Carlyle Group, an American investment fund, and started a company called, well, this is years ago, AsiaSat, which is a Hong Kong company, and have bought satellites from American companies and are leasing or selling a lot of this broadband space to the Chinese government, and including the Chinese military, and they're using it to put down rebellion and repress Tibet and Xinjiang province, while they dropped as customers Radio Free Asia and the Voice of America. And then we have American companies involved in all this. Well, I think the commerce, this was a story that broke 2 days ago in the Wall Street Journal, and I bet Wilbur Ross's head exploded when he read it. So we'll see what's done about that. But this is how competitive they are. And across all of these domains and all, economic, diplomatic, the One Belt, One Road, science research. I mean, this is a major challenge. And one of the things that concerns me, Mark, is we get so tied up with our internal fights, that we're not seeing this. We need to unite, at least as regards this. And I like to see some of these presidential candidates talking about it.
Well, now
this would be something where Biden could be distinctive,
sure,
if he went out and talked about this.
Yeah, and among the candidates that are declared, he's probably really the only one with any foreign policy experience.
That's right.
Yeah,
see, we brought it back. Isn't this good radio? We brought it back to the main, the main lead of the interview. We brought it back to Biden.
Yeah, I don't know where that's going to go, but you talked about it, you at least referred to it, during the Obama administration, the attitude seemed to be the 80s are calling, they want their foreign policy back. They seem to think that they had it all figured out. In the meantime, we're ignoring the needs of the military. We weren't paying nearly enough attention to Russia. I had to listen to Donna Brazile try to defend. President Obama did all he could to warn Russia about dabbling in our 2016 election. Well, apparently not. And now, you know, Hillary Clinton's got a op-ed in the Washington Post saying that's why she lost the election in 2016.
Yeah, I agree. He was. Now, I will say, and I always do say this, I've said this 100 times, that Obama's policy on China was much better than in really any other part of the world. And he laid the foundation for a lot of what Trump is doing. And I give him credit for that. I do. It was called the rebalance policy. And he began to refocus American foreign policy in Asia on the competition with China. Now, Trump has really catalyzed it and operationalized it. But he was better there. And I give him credit for it. But, well, go back to the reset. Google the Russian reset and the pictures of Hillary with the Russian foreign minister, and then this big red reset button.
I remember.
I'm not kidding.
Yeah, I remember it. I remember
it. We're pushing this reset button with Russia, and now Russia's the big enemy. So we're now at war with Atlantia, right? They were completely taken in. They gave him, the worst thing we've done with Russia in the last 20 years was they gave him the missile defense bases that Bush had agreed to build with the Poles and the Czechs.
In Eastern Europe.
He couldn't have believed his good fortune. We just gave it to him.
Wow. Jim, I'm out of time, but great, great conversation as always. Thank you.
Yeah, well, it got me going. Thank you.
That's good. We'll talk to you soon. Former Senator Bye-bye. Jim Talent, bipartisanpolicycenter.org.
Get more at 971talk.com.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.